Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Juliette Johnson, Congresswoman Diana DeGette's Communications Director, and I'll be moderating this evening's telephone town hall. For those of you unfamiliar with the telephone town hall, in just a minute, Congresswoman DeGette will give some brief opening remarks, and then we'll start taking questions. If at any point during this call you wish to ask a question of the Congresswoman, please push star 3. We'll be talking for about an hour about a variety of issues that are important to you. So again, if you would like to ask a question at any time, please press star 3 and you will be placed into the queue. Now I'd like to turn it over to Congresswoman DeGette. Congresswoman?
Thank you so much, Juliette. I want to wish everybody a good evening. It's Diana DeGette calling, and I wanted to thank you for taking time out tonight to join us in this telephone town hall meeting. Tonight, I'm contacting people all over the 1st Congressional District to talk with them about the issues that they care about and to answer any questions that they might have. So I think it's really important to hear from everybody about your issues and concerns. We will try to take as many calls as we can in the brief period that we have, but I know some people may not be able to get their questions answered. And so if we don't get to your question in time, please get in touch with my office in the coming days at 303-844-4988, or you can email us at degette@mail.house.gov. But I do promise I'll make short opening remarks, and then we can get to as many questions as possible. So just a reminder, if you want to ask a question, press star 3 on your phone. That's star 3 to be put into the line for questions. So in Washington right now, we are 3 months or so into the new congressional district. And what I'm focused most on is getting people back to work. I know it feels certainly to everybody in the district and to me that the economy has been tough for a long time, but the economy's been slowly starting to stabilize, and that's a good thing. But the bad thing is we're not doing nearly enough in this economy to make sure that we have real job creation. And we need to do what we can to build an economy that's stable, but also creates jobs for our families and reduces the unemployment rate. And it's not just an economy that helps corporate profits, which are skyrocketing, but we're not seeing any new jobs coming from that. And so that's what we're trying to look at in Congress. We also need to make sure that we get our fiscal house in order and that we work towards a balanced budget, because we can't just keep leaving debt to our children and their children. We need to really have a long-term recovery, and we need to get our national debt under control. But we can't do it by sacrificing even more jobs than we've already lost in this economy, and we can't do it on the backs of those who are still struggling to recover from tough economic times. And so those are really two of my major priorities. One of my new jobs in Congress this year, I'm still Chief Deputy Whip for the Democrats in Congress, but I also became the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations, which is one of the subcommittees of the Energy and Commerce Committee. This position leads us in a bipartisan way to figure out where fraud, waste, and abuse comes throughout the government, but in particular in some of the agencies that administer health care and the environment and energy, telecommunications, and others. Just a couple of weeks ago, we found out that the Inspector General found some waste and fraud in the Medicare Part D program for seniors, and so we're working in a bipartisan way to help try to reduce that. Private health insurers have been underestimating the rebates that they get from manufacturers by about $1.9 billion per year, which has led to increased drug costs for seniors and a lot of tax billions of dollars of taxpayer dollars that have been wasted. And that's unacceptable to me. So we're going to be having more hearings to see if we can put legislation together on a bipartisan basis to make sure we get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. But, we're not going to balance the budget just by eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse. we have to make some tough choices as a country to do that. And I look forward to hearing from my constituents about where they think we can best do it. So I hope I can hear from some of you on those issues tonight, as well as the many issues that affect our country. I have a lot more I could talk about, but I think I'd like to open up the phone lines to you and hear what concerns that you might have. And so I just want to remind you that if you want to ask a question, please press *3, and Juliet's going to come back and talk about how to do that.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. Yes, again, I'd like to remind everyone who's just joined us that whenever you want to ask a question, please press *3. Okay, it looks like our first question is from Jerry from Denver. Jerry, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Hello, Congresswoman DeGette. Thanks so much for your time.
Hi, Jerry.
Just asking you, as you know, to help us try and defend the attack on the Clean Air Act. As you know, there are some members of Congress who would like to overturn that, and specifically ask you to support and defend the entire Clean Air Act, and specifically to allow the EPA to move forward with cleaning up toxic air pollution from power plants.
Yes,
thank you,
know,
for your
Jerry,
time.
I appreciate you mentioning that, because one of the areas that my committee has jurisdiction over is the Clean Air Act. And one thing that I think we can all agree on as Americans is that we want clean air. Those of us who have lived in Denver for many years, I'm a fourth generation Denverite, and I remember when I was a child the terrible brown cloud that we had when I was growing up. And because of the Clean Air Act, our air is not perfect. But if you looked outside today, for example, at the beautiful mountains, you realize what progress we've made in this country. And I'm fighting very, very hard to make sure that we enforce the Clean Air Act in as strong of terms as we can. And that means keeping our regulations just as strong as they can be.
Okay, our next question is from Chad. Chad, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Yes, ma'am. I'm calling, or my question is related to solar power. We've seen Xcel, come and go with a rebate. It's an increasing cost for everyone, and it's my concern. I'm just wondering what programs, you hope to put in place, especially given the recent with the nuclear situation in Japan and your comments.
Yeah. Thank you, Chad. Well, my view on solar power, my view on energy in general is that it's not just good for the environment if we reduce and try to eliminate our reliance on foreign oil. It's also a matter of national defense, and we're seeing that so clearly with what's happening in Libya and around the world. And so I believe that we need to become independent from foreign oil, and I think that supporting renewable energy like solar power and wind power are part of that. Many people have talked about nuclear power as an alternative, and I really have two concerns with nuclear power. The first one is, what do we do with the nuclear waste that comes from nuclear power? Because the power plants that we do have in the U.S. and around the world still are grappling with what they do with this waste. Yucca Mountain, which was under consideration as a permanent nuclear waste disposal site, has now been shut down. And it can really be, again, an issue of national defense, because it could be a terrorist attack. So I'm concerned about that. The second thing I'm concerned about with the nuclear facilities is what we just saw in Japan. And in front of my committee last week, we had some of the senior federal regulators, and I asked them about the U.S. nuclear plants, because we do have some nuclear plants that are the same age as the plants in Japan. And so I think we need to go above and beyond and make sure that any plants that are constructed or that exist right now are safe and are safe even for disasters that we don't think could happen. In Japan, they did not think that they would have such a tsunami, but they did. the Gulf of Mexico, they didn't think that they would have a catastrophic of the BP oil rig last year, which led to such terrible environmental contamination in the Gulf. And so I think we have to, if we're really going to explore these sources of energy, we have to make sure that we can both dispose of the waste and that we can build them in a safe way. I've asked my chairman on the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee to hold hearings on these issues so we can really see if these plants are safe and if we can move forward.
Okay, I just want to remind everyone that if you'd like to ask a question, to please hit *3. Our next call is from Sue in Centennial. Sue, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Hello, Congressman DeGette. I was curious to know, I am a senior, and I'm worried about what Obamacare may do as far as my supplemental Medicare coverage, and I wondered if you could help clarify what might be going on as far as Obamacare and seniors.
Well, actually, the Affordable Health Care Act had many provisions to help seniors. One of the provisions, I don't know if it helps you in particular, is helping seniors reduce their payments in the donut hole for their prescription drugs under Part D. And so your payments for prescription drugs, if you're in the donut hole, will be lower. Something else that the Affordable Care Act did for seniors is it gave seniors access to some health care that they hadn't had before, wellness visits and other types of prevention that are so important for seniors. So there actually was a lot for seniors in the Affordable Health Care Act.
Thank you so much. Our next question is from Ed in Denver. Ed, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Yes, Congresswoman. I totally agree with your stance on trying to decrease our dependency on foreign oil and everything you said about it being a security issue as well as a very directly affecting our economy. And therefore, I'm curious, we know what needs to happen. The guts, I guess, to propose increasing the tax on gasoline to encourage people to use other forms of energy and more so to be more efficient.
Ed, thanks for that great question. And for some years, particularly the leadership on the Transportation Committee has believed that we should increase the gas tax not just to decrease dependence on foreign oil, but also so that we can increase the funds for highway construction, road construction, bridges, mass transit, all of that. We just don't have enough money in the Highway Users Trust Fund to pay for all of the infrastructure that we need in this country. I think there's a feeling in Congress right now, though, that given this economy and frankly, given increasing gasoline prices, maybe right now is not the time to increase the gas tax while our economy is still trying to recover. But eventually, I think we're going to have to look at an increased gas tax if we want to raise the revenues to pave our highways. You have to have the money to make those improvements. Also, though, I think that it's important to give incentives for folks to drive hybrids and other types of cars and for us to try to find ways to bring the prices of electric and hybrid cars down so that people can have alternatives to gas-guzzling larger vehicles.
Okay, and just once again, another reminder for those of you who've just joined us, if you'd like to ask a question, please hit *3 on your telephone and you will be placed into the queue. Our next question comes from Valerie in Denver. Valerie,
yes.
You are live with the Congresswoman.
All righty. How are you doing there?
Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I wanted to know what your feelings were on the Social Security being a part of the balancing of our budget, because I really feel like Senator Reid, waiting until the 20 years from now, since it's not really a part of the deficit, and also about how about Congress bringing back up the reversing of those taxes on the top 2% in order to balance the budget.
Well, Valerie, that's an excellent question. And the first thing I will say is you're right that Social Security is still solvent for many, many years to come. The concern that people have about Social Security, of course, is my kids' generation, with all of the baby boomers retiring, will it continue to be solvent for them? But any changes that we would make in Social Security, number one, they cannot affect current seniors, and I won't vote for a bill that would take any benefits from the current seniors or people who are just ready to retire. Any adjustments that would be made, I would think, would need to be made for future beneficiaries, and if we did it now, they wouldn't have to be very great changes. That's the first thing I'll say. But the second thing I'll say is we shouldn't make any adjustments to any program in a vacuum. If we're going to truly look at deficit reduction and balancing the budget, we need to look at everything, and that would include military spending, agricultural subsidies, not just discretionary spending or not even just Social Security. And part of that, I really agree with you, Valerie, is if you're trying to raise the revenue to give people grants to go to school, to create jobs, to do all of this, then you're going to have to get it from somewhere. And I think that if we reverse those top 2% of tax cuts, that would be a good first step. I voted against the tax cuts for the top 2%. I felt that there should be tax cuts for middle-class Americans and people who are trying to make ends meet in an economic downturn, but the top 2% didn't need it, and that would bring us a lot of revenue.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. Once again, just reminding everyone to please hit *3 when you have a question you'd like to ask. Our next question comes from Bill in Denver. Bill, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Well, good evening, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Hi, Bill.
I heard you speaking a moment ago about revenue, and it just doesn't make a bit of sense that we're giving tax cuts to some of the richest corporations in the history of the universe, that we're giving billionaires tax cuts, which gets sort of to the point and the question that I have, that it seems right now that we have very many misguided policies, and that they are due to the corrupting influence of money in politics. And I think since the Citizens United case came up, that it has made that situation go from terrible to just phenomenally terrible. I'm afraid that all that corporate money is going to drown out my long-winded voice. And with the next presidential election coming up and the need to get new Supreme Court justices on the court so that we can have a little bit more sense coming out of the Supreme Court, I guess what I'm asking is what the Congresswoman suggests that we can do to right some of the problems caused by this overwhelming tight tsunami of corporate money that's washing away honesty as badly as the Japanese tsunami washed away cities.
Yeah, Bill, you know, this is Diana DeGette, and I will tell you, I agree with you on the influence of, certainly the influence of money on the elections. For those of the people who are listening to this call, the Citizens United case was the case, the Supreme Court case a couple of years ago, which said that corporations could spend unlimited amounts of money to influence elections and that they didn't have to disclose how that money was spent. When the Democrats were in the majority party, we tried to pass some legislation, and what the legislation would have said is that if you're a corporation and you're going to spend this money to influence an election, you need to say who's behind the corporation. You need to disclose who's behind it. So if they're going to run an ad they say it's, you know, from Citizens for Truth and Justice, they need to say who's funding that organization. That bill, unfortunately, failed. And so we saw it in the last election where you had these, and I know every single person listening to this was so sick and tired of those ads, and we didn't know where they came from. And if you don't know where they came from, then they can make all kinds of untrue claims. And that's what we were dealing with. And so I'm fearful that if we can't do something, at least for disclosure of who's behind these ads, we're only going to see more of this corrupting influence in politics. And frankly, I suppose a new Supreme Court could review this, or we could once again try in Congress to pass legislation that would require disclosure. I've always believed that sunshine is the best disinfectant. And so if people had to say exactly who they were and how they were influencing elections, they would be a lot less likely to get, say, such blatant lies.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Our next question comes from Lil in Denver. Lil, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Thank you very much. You were talking about tough choices, and one of the tough choices for alternative to foreign oil would be to loosen up the drilling here in the United States again. Doesn't necessarily have to be offshore, but I think there are many places that it could be drilling while we're waiting for the alternative energy, which is going to take quite some time. And the second part of that is what kind of a lead will you take in introducing bills or signing on to bills that will implement the various suggestions of the Debt Commission, that apparently or that did make really, really good suggestions about getting us out of debt for the future, for our children and grandchildren, but which has been sort of ignored by the president and by the Congress.
Yeah, both of those are really good questions. With your first question about loosening up drilling in the United States, I really agree that domestic development of energy is going to be one of the important transitional fuels that we have, because we're not going to be able to just go to these alternative fuels next week, and we are going to need to have a transition. And I do support development of domestic energy sources and drilling. I also think it's important that we do that. Where we drill is important. We need to make sure that we do it in appropriate places, which is most places where there are deposits of natural gas and oil. We also need to make sure that we do it in an environmentally safe way, so that 20 years from now we haven't contaminated all of our aquifers and our groundwater, or have other terrible environmental contamination. But you know, I met with the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission, some of their leadership a couple of weeks ago, and I said that as a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee, I would be happy to try to work with them to see if there's ways that where appropriate we can really boost and improve natural gas production. On your second issue about the Debt Commission, I really thought, as I mentioned earlier, I thought it was important to have this nonpartisan commission that would come up with comprehensive recommendations on the reduction of the debt, and they did that. I don't agree with every single one of their recommendations, but what I do agree with is that we have to put everything on the table, and we have to look at ways. We can't just balance the budget by cutting discretionary spending, because there's not enough money, even if we eliminated discretionary spending, and there would be a lot of cuts there that people wouldn't want to have. So we're going to have to look at all of these different programs to see what is the least painful for people, and also will help us bring the budget into balance. There's a group of Democrats, as well as some moderate Republicans, who have been working with our leadership. I've been working with Steny Hoyer, who's now the minority whip, And he's been working across the aisle to try to get some legislation implementing some of these reforms. But again, I think we need to do it in a comprehensive way, not just by taking one at a time. For example, this idea that Valerie was talking about earlier about just cutting Social Security benefits, I think that's a bad idea. If you're going to look at entitlement programs, number one, you should not affect current beneficiaries, and you should look at it in the long term. And if you did that, because those programs are so large, you wouldn't have to make very large changes for the future beneficiaries. But you can't do it in a vacuum. You also have to look at military spending. You have to look at ag subsidies. You have to look at a lot of other issues. And you have to look at the tax cuts, too, reversing those tax cuts for the highest income taxpayers.
Our next question comes from Elizabeth in Denver. Elizabeth, you are live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Good evening, Congresswoman.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Yes, I did want to ask why you continue to support using our tax dollars to continue to study embryonic stem cells when, at the current moment, science has shown that adult stem cells are much more productive and safe and effective in combating certain diseases.
Thank you so much for your question, Elizabeth. Actually, I've been excited, as sounds like you are, about the research advances that have happened with these adult stem cells. They're taken from the skin, and they're called induced pluripotent cells. And these induced pluripotent cells have shown tremendous potential, but they've also had a lot of problems. I actually was just a week before the earthquake, I was in Japan on an intergovernmental exchange in Japan, meeting with some of my colleagues in the Japanese government, and I happened to meet with one of the prominent Japanese stem cell researchers who helped discover these iPS cells. And what he told me is that they're excited about the potential of these iPS cells, but they also realize that at this point they don't have any they can't be used for human to cure human diseases because they cause tumors. And so the researchers are trying to work through some of that. My view is that any types of these stem cells that researchers can use to help cure diseases, if they are gotten in an ethical way, scientists should be able to use them. And so actually, the iPS cells have not shown to be more efficacious than the embryonic stem cells. They've shown to themselves to be an exciting new direction. But the embryonic stem cells, almost all of the researchers will agree, are still sort of the gold standard for this type of exciting research that could lead to cures for so many diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, nerve regeneration. And in fact, there are right now two human subject studies going on right now with embryonic stem cells, one dealing with the eyes and another dealing with skin types of diseases. And so, you know, it's important to remember that when we're talking about embryonic stem cells, we're talking about embryos that were created for in vitro fertilization techniques that are no longer needed by the couples for whom they were created. They're scheduled to be thrown away as medical waste, and they're voluntarily donated by those couples. And so most of the ethicists, and also the public, there's a general consensus that those cells are appropriate because they can lead to medical advances that can cure diseases. So, you know, what I support is having politicians get out of the way and making sure that these different types of stem cell research are being done in an ethical way, and then let's let the scientists decide what the most important cells for their research are.
Thank you. And once again, I want to remind everyone, if you have a question to ask, to please hit *3 at any point, and you'll be placed into the queue. Now, our next question comes from David in Southeast Denver. David, you are live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Thank you, Congresswoman. This is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Some of us think that the health care reform is not finished yet, and we're looking in Colorado to do some of the state innovation that was mentioned in Section 1322 of the health care bill having to do with health care cooperatives. And there's a bill in Colorado, Senate Bill 168, by State Senator Aguilar that's in the state Senate right now. And I was wondering if there's anything you could do to help encourage this and help make the connections with the national bill.
Well, Dave, thanks for your question. And you're right. The health care bill really put a framework in place under which we're able to develop health care reform. And I know a number of states have expressed interest to Secretary Sebelius and the HHS about different kinds of models. I in fact have talked to Senator Aguilar about her legislation, and it sounds really intriguing. I've already talked to Secretary Sebelius personally about the idea of encouraging states to innovate so long as they meet the general parameters of what we're trying to do with healthcare reform. And they're looking very closely at these proposals. So I think the Secretary and HHS are very receptive to a lot of this innovation. They just want to make sure that we cover everybody, that we're trying to do it in a cost-effective way and with certain kind of minimum standards. So it'll be interesting to see if Senator Aguilar's bill passes, and then we'll have to get a waiver, and I'm certainly happy to talk to the Secretary about that.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Our next call comes from Sue in Denver. Sue, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Hi, Congresswoman. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Oh, you're welcome, Sue.
I was concerned, as I understand you were, about Obama authorizing the air attacks in Libya without congressional consultation or support. And I just wondered what you think is going to happen with that.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Sue, is, you know, the Constitution says that Congress has the authority to declare war. And President Bush even came to Congress both with the Afghanistan situation and also with Iraq. And President Obama did consult with some of the congressional leadership about these attacks in Libya, but I think there's a strong consensus among my colleagues and myself that he should have come to us, explain the situation, and explain what his intention was. I'm concerned for several reasons. Number one, I think it steps on the congressional prerogative. But beyond that, I think that we really need to assess what is the purpose of this military action, what is the president and our allies trying to achieve in Libya, and how long is this, you know, how does this affect our national security, and how much is this going to cost? Because we're already on two fronts. We're pulling out of Iraq. I think we need to come out of Afghanistan, and there's some money right there that we could be using to help balance our federal budget. President Obama says that this is going to be a very limited U.S. involvement and just a matter of days. But nonetheless, I think he should have come to Congress. And I've called on Speaker Boehner to call us. You know, we're on recess all of this week. And so my immediate reaction was, let's all go back to Washington. Let's bring in the generals. Let's bring in the White House. Let's have them tell us what they're doing so that we can assess whether we would authorize this or not. So far, I know you'll be shocked, Speaker Boehner has not listened to my suggestion, but I wish he would, because I think this is a very serious matter.
Thank you. And just a reminder to everyone, particularly those who may have just joined the call, please hit 3 if you'd like to ask a question of the Congresswoman. Again, that's star 3 on your phone. Our next question tonight comes from Ernest in Denver. Ernest, you are live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Thank you. Congresswoman DeGette, I want to thank you for the fantastic job you have done so far and hope you continue to do so. Now, my question is...
You're welcome, and thank you for your kind words, Ernest.
Oh, absolutely, because I continue to vote for you anyway. So, with Afghanistan and Iraq, and now the situation in Libya, my question is, what is going to happen to us military and retired military people? Is there going to be financial cuts? Is there going to be cuts in our TRICARE for Life program? Is there going to be a hurt put on the military? And is there any way that, like you said just a little few minutes ago, to try to get the people out of Afghanistan and Iraq? And we shouldn't be in Libya. So.
Well, yeah. Ernest, let me say, first of all, thank you so much for your service to our country and to all the veterans who are listening tonight. In the past couple of years, Congress, under the leadership of Nancy Pelosi and of Harry Reid and with President Obama, we really increased benefits for military veterans. We increased pay, and we increased the benefits for their families, which was so important for us. And we also increased education benefits so that veterans can come back and go to college and get additional training. We do not intend to balance the budget on the backs of the retired military, and I don't expect that we're going to see cuts in TRICARE. I don't think that that's the way to go. So, and we're going to have a lot more veterans who need medical treatment. And by the way, we're going to have a new veterans hospital soon opening up in out at Fitzsimmons. And I'll tell you, the current VA hospital is in my district, and it is I think the staff there is wonderful, but frankly, the facilities leave a lot to be desired. And so I'm excited, and the entire congressional delegation from Colorado has worked very, very hard together in a bipartisan basis to try to get this new hospital out of Fitzsimmons. So we're looking forward to that facility for our veterans.
Thank you, everyone. I just want to remind everybody we have about 20 minutes left and we have a lot of questions, so please hang on and we're going to try and get to you all. But if not, at the end of the call, there will be a voicemail option for you to leave a question and we will get back to you as soon as possible. Our next question comes from Carol in Englewood. Carol, you're live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hi, Congresswoman DeGette, and I join the others in thanking you for your service. I am, you know, a supporter of yours and of President Obama's. I am concerned because I think that the Republicans have one agenda for the rest of this term until the next presidential election, and that's to just block anything that might, you know, be good for the Democrats and be good specifically for the president. And I would like to know what, if anything, you think might entice the Republicans to work with the Democrats when clearly the good of the country is at stake. And I would use the health care reform bill as an example. There are so many things in that they have suggested in the past, and just because now it came from our side of the aisle, they're saying how horrible it is. And I just I feel frightened and helpless because, you know, I just don't see any movement. And you just said so yourself that, you know, John Boehner hasn't listened to you, and I don't have a lot of hope for any kind of bipartisan work getting done.
Well, you know, Carol, let me just say a couple of things. The first thing, a lot of people would not believe this, but there are many things that happen in Congress on a bipartisan basis. Many of you know about the stem cell legislation that I was able to pass. And unfortunately, President Bush vetoed it twice, but I passed it through Congress twice on a bipartisan basis with strong Republican and Democratic support. Your congressional delegation in Colorado works very closely together on a bipartisan basis on issues that face the state. So the pine beetle issues in the mountains, on transportation and roads, fast tracks, on the Union Station development, all of those things are things that we've worked on a bipartisan basis. Unfortunately, though, on a lot of the hot button issues, Carol is right that it's difficult to get agreement, and there's a lot of partisan bickering in Washington. I think that, frankly, we should come together on a bipartisan basis around the number one issue that's still facing this country, and that issue is how do we create good jobs for people? Doesn't seem to me that that should be a partisan issue. And there's a couple of different ways we can work on that. One of them is to make sure that we have adequate funding for loans and grants and other types of assistance for people to go back to school and get retrained into jobs for the new high-tech economy. One of them is to help look at ways to give incentives for businesses to stay here in America and to create jobs rather than going offshore and creating the jobs. And there are a whole host of ways that we could work on job creation that are nonpartisan ways. Carol talked a little bit about the health care reform bill, and I think that there are some genuine differences between Democrats and Republicans on how to approach health care reform. But the problem is, before we did that bill, the health care costs were the most were the quickest growing segment of our economy, and it was unsustainable. So if we wanted to really grow our economy over the next 20 years, we couldn't do it with health care costs increasing and with fewer and fewer Americans able to afford insurance. Well, now some of the reforms in the health care bill have started to take effect, and Americans like them. The reforms that you can't exclude people for pre-existing conditions, or that you can put your kids on your health insurance until they're 26, or you can't discriminate against somebody because of their gender. All of those things are important, but you can't have those unless you have everybody participating in health insurance. And so I think as time goes on, the American public will understand why we did this bill. And also, I think, as I was saying earlier to Dave, I think that we'll be able to improve on the bill, and we'll be able to make it so that we can give even better benefits at more efficient costs for people. So I remain optimistic. It's frustrating sometimes, but I just wish that the Republicans would realize that the main agenda items that are facing this country aren't cutting national public radio or gutting our environmental laws, but it's really creating jobs, and I think we could do that in a bipartisan way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. The next call comes from David in Denver. David, you are live with Congresswoman DeGette. David?
Hi. Yes, hi there. Hi, Congresswoman.
Hi.
Great to speak with you. I wanted to go back to a topic you were talking about earlier related to energy, and I just wanted to get your view as to how we might close off some of the billions and billions of dollars in subsidies and tax breaks that are given to oil companies that now have over $100 a barrel price to incentivize them to drill and explore. And I think a lot of that money could go to help folks in Colorado just sort of re-jumpstart the green energy industry, which had been getting going and seemed like it stalled out. And connected to that also is just a question of tax loopholes and sort of corporate welfare in general. We see a lot of debate about whether the rich should pay a higher tax and so forth. And I'm in agreement that there should be a higher tax rate on people making a lot of money. But I think that corporate welfare sort of scoots under the radar, maybe for reasons mentioned by an earlier caller, which has to do with the amount of influence of lobbyists on Congress. So that's a sort of complicated question, but as you were pointing out, these things all tie together.
Yes, they do all tie together. And, you know, just to talk to you for a minute about the tax subsidies to oil companies, in the last Congress, a number of us tried to shut down some of those subsidies and to take that money instead and put some of it towards development of renewable energy and alternative energy. And we were not successful in doing that. But the oil companies are making a huge profit. And as you know, we're paying huge amounts right now. Oil has gone up. And so this is something I care about, but I don't think that the current congressional leadership will eliminate these tax subsidies to the oil companies. I think what we should do is exactly what you suggested, which is take that and put it towards development of domestic renewable energy. And, of course, that would really benefit states' economies like Colorado. In terms of the tax loopholes and the corporate welfare, I think that, again, you know, it's important to have wealthier taxpayers pay a higher tax, and that includes corporations. And for whatever reason, the leadership of Congress right now just does not doesn't feel that same way. And so we had a real effort earlier this Congress to eliminate some of the tax loopholes that benefit the wealthiest and corporations. And unfortunately, we were not successful. But again, we're really going to balance the budget. We need to put all of those things on the table. And I would rather close those tax loopholes than to increase taxes on middle-class Americans who are having enough of a hard time making ends meet.
Now we have Rosemary from Denver. Rosemary, you are live with the Congresswoman.
Yes, Congresswoman, thank you so much. It appears that those things that you're fighting for us are things that are really dear to our heart. Oh. My concern is how can we send money overseas to so many other countries and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan have drained our coffers. And as a result, those individuals are determining that Medicare, Medicaid, those kinds of aids to the elderly, to the disabled, should be cut. And it just doesn't equate to me.
Yeah,
and I wonder what you were interested in doing about that.
Yeah, Rosemary, I really agree with you. I think first of all, I do think that it's important to send foreign aid to countries like Japan, who's in trouble right now, or Haiti when they had their earthquake last year, those types of things. And I don't think that's what you're talking about. What you're talking about is these two wars, which continue to go on. And I've concluded for myself that they really are not. We're not getting a benefit from those wars. We're not eradicating the terrorists that attacked us on September 11th, which is the purpose. And so the last few years, I've been voting to bring our troops home from Afghanistan and Iraq so that we can both bring, for the troops' sake and also for our country's sake, because I think you're right. I don't think we should be talking about cutting any programs that benefit disabled folks or senior citizens, and I don't think we should be cutting education programs for our children and for retraining for our workers in order to be able to pay for those wars. So I agree with you. But let me also just say one more time, there is no discussion in Washington about cutting Social Security and Medicare for current senior citizens, and there's been a lot. You know, a lot of times I find these rumors get started on the Internet and other places, and people get really, really worried, and they should check it out because it is not the case that anybody is talking about cutting benefits for current recipients.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Now we'd like to talk to Stuart from Denver. Stuart, you are on the line with Congresswoman DeGette.
Congresswoman DeGette, first of all, thank you so much for your years of service to our district and to the country. I'm a Vietnam veteran and now an unemployed journalist who's collecting, this week is 99th week of unemployment insurance. And you and many others in Washington have talked about the importance of creating jobs in this jobless recovery economy. But I haven't really heard a lot of concrete plans of just how are we going to create jobs for people.
Thank you. First of all, Stuart, thank you for your service to our country, both as a Vietnam vet and as a journalist. I actually have a sister who was a journalist for many years and is now working several different jobs in order to make ends meet. And so I appreciate what you're facing. In terms of concrete suggestions to create jobs, my party has had quite a number of suggestions, and I mentioned some of them earlier. The first thing that we've got is we've got a lot of Americans, and it's not just journalists who need to be retrained. It's women who are my age, who were administrative assistants and clerical workers, who their jobs have been eliminated and they're not coming back. It's people, it's all kinds of workers whose jobs have been eliminated and they're not coming back. These folks need to be retrained so that they can have different jobs in our new economy. And what we need to do for that is we need to support those folks with grants and loans so that they can get re-educated to do that. The second thing that we need to do is we need to support development of new technologies. And so as I was discussing with one of the earlier callers, if we can support technologies in Colorado for alternative energy, we were doing great for a while with that, and that would be a domestic resource that we could use. And then the third thing that we really need to do is we need to make sure that folks can get health care and that they can get all of the benefits so that they can get those jobs. And finally, and one thing I've been pretty adamant about is we can't eliminate unemployment benefits and COBRA for people who lost their jobs but have been diligently trying to find new jobs and need that safety net until they find their new jobs. I just want to say good luck to you with this. It's not easy, and all of the other callers who are out of a job right now. I don't think that we're going to be able to do this overnight, but I do think that with the efforts of education and retooling that we can do it, and we need to do it.
Thank you, Congresswoman. We've got time for about one or maybe two more questions. Right now, we'd like to take a question from Pat in Denver. Pat, you are live with Congresswoman DeGette.
Hello, how are you?
Hi,
I appreciate
Pat,
how well
I'm
you
well.
Think on your feet. I'm impressed.
Thanks.
You're welcome. My concern, and I cannot get anybody to talk to me about this, is the amazing, grotesquely obscene amount of money that is being spent by everybody on high-stakes testing. And while that money is being spent on testing, they're giving the teachers more and more kids to teach and less materials to do it with. It's got to be maybe even billions of dollars across the United States by the time you talk federal and state money. And I would like to be able to find out how much that is and do something about it. It's counterproductive. Those of us in the mental health field say that if a situation is making you feel crazy, it probably is. And I think this probably is very diagnostic of how crazy the situation is.
Yeah.
So if maybe we could talk about it another time, or if you could...
Sure. Let me talk for a minute about it right now, because I'm really delighted that you called and asked me a question about education spending, because my mom was also named Pat and she was a kindergarten teacher in the DPS for 30 years. So I feel like maybe she would have asked that exact type of question. So I feel like maybe you're channeling my mom a little bit. And here's what I will have to say. The No Child Left Behind Act and some of the state legislation which put testing and evaluation in places for schools a lot of people thought it was important to measure the performance of schools so we could then figure out where the low-performing schools were and improve them so that all of our students would have a chance. And this makes a lot of sense to do this rather than just saying, gee, you know, I think these schools are doing well, these ones maybe not so much. You would have some actual data by which you could measure the schools and then you could decide what you needed to do to improve them. The problem was we put all the money into the testing and we didn't put the money into the remediation. And so it doesn't really do you any good, in my view, to test the kids at the school to say, you know, this school is not performing. Oh, well, you need to say this school, if it's not performing, why isn't it performing? And are there resources that we can bring to bear to help it perform better? And it was the second part of that equation that just didn't happen under the No Child Left Behind Act. So that act is up for reauthorization this year. And many of us are saying that we will not vote for any reauthorization unless that they actually have the funds not just to do the testing and evaluation, but then to actually fix the schools once that happens. And so that's kind of the way I look at it. I think it is important to know how your schools are doing, but you also have to have the ability to fix them.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. That was actually our last question. Would you like to say a few words?
Well, I'd just like to say thank you to all of my wonderful constituents for sticking with us for this. We are able to reach so many people by doing telephone town hall meetings, and the good news is you can sit right in your home and do it from your phone. So the other thing I want to tell you is we have a strong office of caseworkers here in the Denver office who can help with issues like veterans benefits, Social Security checks, housing issues. And I really consider myself to be everybody's representative. And so if you have any issues that we can help you with, don't hesitate to call my office. My phone number is 303-844-4988. And my email address is deget@mail.house.gov. And if you just want to contact me about an issue, the best way to do it is to send me an email, and we will read it and we will respond. So thanks again for being the best constituents in the world. I appreciate it, and I'm hoping I will talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you, everyone. And just a quick reminder, there will be a voicemail recording at the end where you can leave your question, and we'll be sure to get back to you. As a last note, just to stay on top of everything that Congresswoman DeGette is doing in the district and in Washington, you might want to go to our website and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter. We send those out, and it'll give you the full range of what's happening and how she's working for you. Thank you so much for your time this evening, and have a good night.